In the age of the customer, many companies and organizations fall short in meeting the needs and wants of their customers, let alone exceeding them. And it's time to change that. Welcome to CX Leadership Talks. Our passion is to be a catalyst for you and your organization as a customer experience leader to help understand, design, and improve experiences across the entire customer journey and the customer lifetime. It's time to spice up your CX leadership, and we've got the pro who's going to talk you through it. This is CX Leadership Talks, and now your host, Ninka Bloom.
Welcome to the CX Leadership Talks podcast, and we just recorded an incredible episode with a thought leader in AI, and I think we as CX leaders need to really learn so much more about that. So sit back and listen. What we're going to do, we're going to delve into the world of customer experience, customer contact, and today with an innovator that shapes the future, because we are having Robert Dijkstra, CEO of DeepDesk, and he's a visionary in the AI landscape. He brings a unique perspective on how artificial intelligence is revolutionizing customer service, the agent experience, and enhancing customer interactions. Because in this episode, we'll explore his journey in creating DeepDesk, but also his insights on the evolving role of AI in customer experience and how he envisions the future of technology. He takes us 5 years from now. I love his honesty and the examples he gives, the real-life examples, where, for example, the one of DHL is a true gem. So wherever you are, whether in your car, in the gym, walking outside, or just are in your office, get ready for an enlightening conversation with one of, I think, leading minds in the intersection of AI, large language models, and customer service. Welcome to the podcast, Robert Dijkstra. All right, Robert, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's always interesting, always my first question. I've introduced you as I would introduce you, but how do you introduce you? If you come somewhere new, what do you say? How do you introduce yourself to the room?
Currently, I'm a founder and CEO of DeepDesk. In general, I'm more of an entrepreneur. I've started several companies, usually on the crossroads of innovation and technology.
Yeah, because always, as a podcast host, always doing some research. And when I look at your LinkedIn and some information, there's two major words I see. It's consultant and... Well, we crossed some time where you were at KPN and I was at KPN, but I think you were at a different area. So consultant and founder. How did your career grow around these roles? And in the end, of course, we're going to talk about AI. How did you end up in AI?
Yeah, I started quite young, actually. I was working at what was then called Videotex, later called Planet Internet, actually at the help desk, even, as I was a student. Met somebody there, or actually a customer called, and he said, oh, it seems like you are quite familiar with the subject of the internet and everything. And he was working for KPN at the time. I think I was maybe 18 years old. And he asked whether I could work for KPN as a consultant, because the mobile internet was just starting to develop. And so this is how I got into essentially the consultancy role. And just by being maybe like very much interested in technology. As from a young age, I ran my own bulletin board system, a BBS, when I was 14. So I was interested in technology, and that interest led to things like becoming a consultant. Later on, I did quite some work in the consultancy, like a little bit of the boardroom consultancy, advising on, okay, this is what's happening in the world of technology, and this is what's impacting your company. But for the upside of consultancy is you get to see a lot of problems in the world with many companies. So it's a broad view of what's happening. The downside is you're limited to your own hours. It's only there's one and that's it. I started several companies and it's mainly to have more impact, essentially. So if you build technology, that's usually more scalable. And building things, creating things with new technology is also something I enjoy really like a lot. It's one of the things that drives me. Eventually becoming a founder of two AI companies prior to running a consultancy boutique. And AI is just, I think it's like every new technology, it's interesting. The internet prior to AI, of course, was very much impactful. And I think AI is going to be even more impactful for society as a whole. It's just a general curiosity into new technologies and what they will imply for the world. And solving problems is one of the things that you do. Yeah.
Yeah, I think when you look at what's going on now, AI, you cannot, if there's a conference without an AI topic, I'm like, okay, this is weird. So it is truly booming. And I'm also very curious, reading a lot about it. And I never say I'm an expert. I think there's people like you that we need to. So let's dive a little bit deeper, especially for the audience, people in customer experience, in customer contact. How do you see AI transforming the customer experience landscape? And what key benefits do you see for organization when it comes to CX and AI?
Yeah. I think we've been working on integrating AI into the contact center space since 2019. That's when we founded DeepDesk together with my two co-founders. And essentially, we started with a proof of concept for a company called VodafoneZiggo. And essentially, we built something that learned from the technology, from the data that is already available within the contact center. And based on that, we give recommendations to people working in the contact center, agents or advisors. This was a very small proof of concept, essentially. And the starting point, applying AI to data and therefore being able to help people doing their work. And we've built from there. We also started building generative AI. We introduced the first AI models, which are similar to GPT-3 and 4, which are really well known now in 2020 already. So we're a bit ahead of the curve in terms of putting the technology, the AI technology, into the contact center. And I think it does a couple of things. The obvious one is increasing productivity, which is usually the main driver to reduce costs, et cetera. The other thing is helping out to remove a lot of repetitive work that people do, which is very much boring. And that drives people to say, okay, I'm not going to continue doing this job. And the third one maybe is quality. So being able to steer in certain cases towards another outcome maybe, or increase the amount of results you get from the conversation that you are having with the customers that you have. And I think this is not so much only for the customer contact center agents, but this is for employees in general. So thinking about what Microsoft is doing with Copilot for the average knowledge worker, I think it's all similar. It's all the same. It's only with verticals specifically tailored towards, for example, the contact center space. And we've chosen specifically that vertical because there's 20, 30 million people working in the contact center space worldwide. So it's a huge problem to solve, you could argue. And I think that's, as a company or as a startup, it's always nice to have a big problem to solve, because then you work for a reason, essentially.
Yeah. And when you look at the future, I think it's going so fast. And you just mentioned generative AI, and you hear all this terminology. And I know many of my listeners know, but I also know that many of them like to be informed. Can you explain a little bit about the different elements of that AI? For example, generative AI. What is it?
Yeah, maybe one step back would be to explain how we used AI prior to having the generative AI. This is the classic model, essentially, is saying, okay, you have data, you feed that data into a computer that runs an algorithm, and that algorithm learns from the patterns that are in the data. So you train a specific model for a specific task, maybe to give advice to an agent to say, okay, in this case, you should do this. Or in this case, if the customer does say this, then you need to say this. And so those are specific tailored models. Those are, you need to train them by hand, and you need to have, for example, a lot of data to train. In many cases, we use the data from our customers. So VodafoneZiggo or maybe Rabobank or other customers that we have, we train the models based on their data. And that's good, because then you get the answers and the problems that you need as examples for the AI to train a proper model. Moving forward, where we are now with the introduction of the ChatGPTs, like OpenAI introducing it and Microsoft deploying it, and you can buy it as an enterprise as well, which many of our customers do. That this is more of the generative AI, which is still AI, but it's trained on essentially all the data that is out there in the world, you could argue, saying, okay, and it learns from the patterns that are in there. And if you give it enough data, this is why it's called a large language model, it will become good enough to be useful in generic applications as well. So you don't have to train it on specific tasks or specific data set. And then you can use it maybe to summarize maybe a conversation which you are having with your customers. But for other things as well, to evaluate whether something is happening in the conversation or the customer is happy either. So a little bit of a sentiment analysis. In like 2020, you had to build specific models for that. Nowadays, with the large language models, you can use these large language models. And it's easier, but the downside is it's also more costly, because the smaller models are fairly cheap to run in comparison. And the larger language models cost more money. In many cases, for our customers, the business case is still very positive, but it's a bit of a change. So what we do as DeepDesk is we employ these smaller AI models on the bottom end for simple tasks, and we use the large language models on top of that for more complex tasks. And then we merge them together. So it's a bit of a decision tree saying, okay, this task can be done by a simple algorithm. This we send to the LLM.
I think I just think out loud and reading about it, you think like in a contact center, an agent has had a call, and then afterwards you have this wrap-up time where they have to type in what the conversation was about. I think those tasks will definitely disappear, right?
It's already, we've implemented this for Rabobank, and it's in the Netherlands, and they run, I think, up to 8 or 10 million conversations, both telephony and digital channels. We implemented DeepDesk there as a solution for also that problem. So we give suggestions to the customer's agents, but also doing the wrap-up, it's a summary. Yep. And we will be building on that. And I think in the case of Rabobank, I think that they almost shaved off a minute out of their wrap-up time. And then if you do 10 million calls a year, then you can really see where the business case is.
Yeah, it's also the work that agents don't like. So it's really finding these win-wins. But yeah, I really like it. Looking a little bit more of challenges, you already talked about the large data model. What are other significant challenges businesses face when integrating AI into business, especially in the CX space?
What we see a lot, or what we have seen a lot, is that many organizations, especially if they're a bit larger, they are able to build prototypes and build their first models. But running them in production is really a challenge to them because it's always difficult to keep things going, to maintain them, etc. Yep. So that's a challenge for most organizations. The other thing is keeping everything under control. If you have the AI model, so we use software for that, so you can steer the AI in certain directions, so you still have some sort of control. And then many towards the large language models, there's for the Rabobank, for example, but this has been an issue for larger enterprises other than those, is that they need to have some sort of a vision about it. Okay, how do we cope with ChatGPT? Is it safe? Is it compliant? Are we allowed to use it? Under what circumstances are we and then not? So that's a part of the compliance process that they have usually, which might take some effort. What we always propose is to put some sort of a task force together where everyone gets together and gets those things out of the way prior to doing the project, because that really helps explaining what it is and what the implications are. And one of the things that we always say, the agent assist that we provide as a technology is always with a human in the loop. So we're not a chatbot company, as says DeepDesk. We only give the suggestions towards the agent, and the agent gets to decide whether they want to use those suggestions or use the summary that has been auto-generated for them. And if they don't, they can still leave it as is. They can change it or they can discard it. So that's, I think, one of the measures many organizations take to take steps to using those AIs, but still be in control and maintain a level of certainty.
Yeah, and it sounds very interesting putting a vision, for example, for AI. I think that's very difficult for organizations when they have often no clue. Yeah, I cannot say it any other way.
No, yeah.
I think, yeah.
I can see that it might be a bit far. On the other hand, there's really good examples, companies doing it. And I think we are mainly working for the larger organizations, which may run hundreds of people in their contact center space in this environment. And I think they have the capability to maintain some sort of a vision and the power to pull through that. Whereas many of the smaller, medium-sized businesses might have a bit more trouble there. I think on the other hand, this is usually the case. So in general, I would say, okay, just start experimenting. Low end, we yep. offer trials for 3 months and then you can start. And if you like it, you keep it. And if you don't like it, you stop using the software. So if you want to, you can definitely start using these types of technologies.
And taking me to the future, people are envisioning, if we go 5 years from now, we don't know, but you're an expert. What's going to happen?
I think so we're now at number 4 for, let's say, the large language model. And then I think OpenAI is dominating that space. And then Microsoft providing access to it via Azure. That's the distribution that we see a lot, especially in Europe.
Yep.
I think in the US, it might be a bit different. What we are already seeing is that there will be other vendors that provide large language models as well. So there's Anthropic maybe, and there are some initiatives in Germany and in France as well, and quite a few actually. At the moment, there's billions being poured into that space. There will be more vendors for this type of technology. So that's the first thing that will happen. The other thing that will happen, I think, is that the models will be more, will become more task specific. Make the connection to saying, okay, using a large language model is a bit like using a truck for doing shopping. The point is that it can do the job, but nobody takes a truck. You go by a small car in principle because you have, it's more efficient, you go faster, it's easier to park, etc. So I think that's the same thing. We are now using large language models where we may be using smaller language models, which are more specific to specific tasks. So that's on the technology end. I think on the end user end, so maybe the consumer, maybe the agent in the contact center or the employee in the enterprise working environment. As you can see already, it's the pace is, okay, you will have a copilot-like software within the context of your software. Maybe it's your CRM or your Office application. For the agent in the contact center, it's just a CX environment, of course, and this will be ubiquitous. It will be everywhere. So you won't even know the difference between what will be AI-assisted or not. And it will move towards where I think the comparison with electricity is a good one because it will be everywhere and you will take it for granted. And if it's not there, you complain that you don't have the AI. Or you might end up having AIs talk to each other. So you have your version of a large language model, which maybe resembles whatever you like and your preference. And maybe also someone that, let's say, represents you. So an AI that is taking care of certain tasks. So my AI might talk to my insurance company saying, okay, Robert doesn't like this type of product. And then it's taking that information from my preferences or from my data. This might be 5 or 10 years in the future, but I think that we are already seeing this. So I think that's really interesting because it will take away a lot of the washing machine in principle is an AI as well, or it's not so much an AI, it's a robotic. Yeah. But we take it for granted now. And you would spend a lot of time or doing your washing your clothes, maybe 2 or 3 hours per day, where now it takes you only a couple of minutes. So I think it will be similar to that. It will be everywhere and everybody will use it. Yeah. And most people won't even bother by knowing it.
Having my avatar, don't have to call anymore with my car lease company or whatever. All these things you don't want to do. Have the AI.
Yeah. And mostly I think this has been maybe projected for the future a lot already. So having your AIs, but I think it might not be one that does everything. You might have specific robot AIs that will do certain specific tasks for you or propose solutions or suggestions for a specific thing. And they will be, I think, more use case based than like an AGI, which may be around the corner in 10 years or 40 years. Nobody knows. But then you have a whole different scenario. I'm not sure if we will be there in the next 5 or 10 years.
No, maybe that's too fast.
It might be. So I've said in other cases that the introduction of GPT-4 and 3 in, let's say, 12, 14 months ago, we had some sleepless nights in terms of, is this going to be a runaway AI? As of now, it hasn't happened, but you never know what happens. Yeah. I don't think that will happen, but it's an interesting nightmare to think about, I would say.
I think it's so important because I still know, and many of my listeners, they heard about ChatGPT, but many of them still don't use it. And as an entrepreneur, I would be stupid not to use it. I prepare my interviews like this with it, and it needs my voice, and it you can train it even, but still I like to tweak it and I like to pick and choose, but it really helps me with my productivity, but also with quality because it brings me to areas that I never had thought about. So I think it really is helping me in that brainstorming element. But I think leaders should really start experimenting and looking out there what's there, not just for themselves, but also for their organizations. Because if they don't, other people will take their place. And I think from a leadership perspective, you need to know what is a great event where they should go, for example.
Maybe not going to an event. What I would do is, this is what we do, actually. We're an AI company, but we provide, let's say, ChatGPT, the latest version. We pay for that for every people working in our company. We just put it, we give it to them. And then we try to give an example saying, okay, if you do this task now, try to use it, do it in ChatGPT. See what it says. Or maybe if you have something needing fixing in your home, ask for instructions. Say, okay, this is the task that I'm required to do. And then the ChatGPT will tell you, okay, you should do this. And then you can learn starting to use it. So maybe if you do a search normally on Google, then start asking those questions towards ChatGPT. Yeah. And then you will learn to see, okay, this is powerful. This is where it will help. And then I think bringing it more towards the daily work that you do and deploying it and just forcing yourself to use it, put it on your mobile phone, ask the questions, see what it does for you, if it helps you out, etc., is very practical in getting used to it. What we see this morning, especially, I was in a meeting with a customer of ours, and then all of the engineering people that are in those larger companies, they are really used to something works or something doesn't. So if you build a connection to between two systems, so from maybe an API connection, then if you send a packet of data or information, then it's being received and sent. And if it's that's zero or one.
One or zero, yeah.
It's an LLM. Yeah, it's what it is. And this is how we have been doing software development, but also implementations of software projects for 10, 20, 40, 50 years now. With the large language models, you might not get the right answer all the time. But if you are able to do 40% of all the questions that you do in an automated fashion, and then you still have to do the other 60% by hand, you've gained 40% already. And the step to start doing that is way easier in terms of, otherwise you need to build systems that pull two systems together, which is usually hard, especially if T capacity, etc. If you could build something with a large language model that identifies, oh, this is happening, you need to put that there, and you can already automate maybe 40% of the transactions, then you've won already. You can build on that. So start experimenting. That's essentially. So maybe don't go to a conference. Maybe start experimenting with it.
Go to ChatGPT. Which conference should I go now?
Yeah, maybe. And probably there's good conferences. And I think looking at use cases, so what we do, for example, is do webinars saying, okay, this is how we deploy the ChatGPT for other companies, or this is how we implement AI within Vodafone or NS or other companies that we help with our technology.
I think it's a very practical advice. And going to Deep Desk, because we already went there, how do you align your vision with the evolving customer needs? How do you do that as Deep Desk?
We are taking pride in the fact that we try to be, let's say, on the forefront of the technology. So we take a lot of time to try things and work with new technologies and then put them together. And then what we do is we bring those prototypes or ideas or concepts forward with large customers in so-called roadmap sessions. And we do this maybe on a quarterly or a 6-month basis. And that's the higher level. So we put those forward saying, okay, these are the ideas that we have and what does resonate and what doesn't resonate. They'll give you the feedback on a higher level. Maybe this is on a managerial level. Saying, okay, this is the problem that we have. This could be applicable here. And then we start to deploy that into the organization on the operational level. And then you get the feedback on, okay, this function should work like this. So then we fine tune whatever we have built and make it better, more generic, so other customers can use it as well. So essentially what we do is we talk a lot to the customers. That's the short version. Yeah. And we do this on all of the levels in the organization to hear. We also visit contact centers looking at how does the agent does his or her work. Okay, these are the screens. And usually many people think that resolving problems in the contact center is about putting AI in. But in many cases, it's more of a hygienic factor of not having 60 screens in front of you or six CRM systems or knowledge bases and trying to maybe unify a lot of that information that an agent has to process into one space, one place where they can look using large language models to process that information, putting the right things in front of the people that do the work at the right time. But then it's even more of a UI, UX, so that the user experience or the interface that somebody has is a large part of the work that we do. A lot of it's AI, but many things have to do with how do you open the door? If the door handle is broken, and this is your daily job, opening the door 10 times a day, then you get annoyed. So we try to take those broken things out of the way and put things that work in place. And then in many cases, AI will assist you in that. But it's principally, it's how a technology company works is you develop stuff, roadmap, ideas, proof of concepts, prototypes, putting them in production, seeing what works, changing them a bit, making them more production ready, and then rolling them out to multiple customers or selling them to others as well. So it's learning by a feedback loop of the users and or the buying people within the organizations.
To give people an ID on timing, I'm just, while we were talking, I'm like, when you come in, you say we have, of course, this trial version. What if you're the tax office and you have all these systems and it's time to help these people at the contact center? How long does it take before you have a little bit of a proof of concept and then you can start rolling it out? Just to give it an idea.
Using it, the trial takes 3 months, and I think that's the period that they start using it and then see if it's working for them. And in general, it's really a larger organization because of the impact of the technology is more useful if you have a large population, obviously. But I think in many cases, the contracting and the legal and the compliance procedures are taking more time than the actual trial does. So it might take up to 6 months. Yeah, this is always an enterprise. This is you better get used to that if you want to run an enterprise company. But that's, in many cases, I think maybe 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
And I think in general, where it is the most slow is with our customers. It's just their nature. It's how it goes. And then we've accepted that. But we can move pretty fast. I think what we've done for quite recently last year, we had a hackathon. We proposed a couple of things and we had it running in 3 months. And then rolled out to 2,000 agents. So that's pretty impactful.
Wow. When you look at, you already gave some examples, but I think for a lot of people, because it's very conceptual, AI is big, it's far away, it's large language model. If we make it very small, I like to explain it as color it in.
Yep.
What example do you have where you said, this is what we did, and this is how we really improved the customer experiences and the agent experience?
Yeah, I think the simplest example is DHL. They run an operation, a couple of hundred people in their contact center. They answer chat questions, chat and messaging questions, and email. We deployed Deep Desk there. Deep Desk learned from the conversations from the past. So we put in 500,000 chat conversations with DHL had previously with other customers. AI starts to learn, usually if the customer complains about this, then this is the solution. Or if the customer says this, then the agent usually answers this. And then we put this into their solution that they have. They are using Salesforce. So we plug into Salesforce so they don't have to implement a new CX system. We have a layer on top of Salesforce and or Genesys, their large platform.
Yep.
We have standard integrations with those. And then DHL started using our software. So they are getting autocompletes of their sentences, but they type a lot towards the customer. And then we autocomplete their sentences. So a good example is, may I have your street name, house number, date of birth? And if the agent starts typing May, then we already complete that sentence. So that saves them a lot of time in terms of writing the whole sentence.
Yeah.
It's a simple form, simple example. Another thing is putting in technology that supports them in getting the right resolution for the problem in place. So once the customer says, I lost my password, for example, there's a small widget within the context of Salesforce that says, okay, this is probably the solution for that problem, because we've seen that. We've seen that working for 1,000 times in the other conversations. And that might be a link to a web page where they can reset their password. And this is all automated. So these recommendations, these autocompletes, these suggestions, it's an automated system. So you don't have to maintain it, because we train every 2 weeks automatically. So it keeps up to date. You don't have to work it. You don't have to put it in. It's learning from the data that's been provided by DHL when we keep getting a conversation copy. In general, we anonymize that. So in compliance and privacy terms, it's usually good to do that. And the customer gets a little tool, which we call the dashboard, and they can modify things if they like solutions to be recommended or not. So they have a little bit of an influence of, this is what we do want agents to say, and this is what we don't want them to say. So there's a little bit of a layer of control. And that's somebody in the contact center, usually a senior agent, might use that every 2 weeks on a Monday morning, evaluating the new things and then saying, this is okay, or we want to change this out a little. That's specifically for the digital channels. So that's on chat and messaging and email. So we help write people faster. The other thing is knowledge assist. Then we take all the sources that they have, knowledge bases, maybe things that they have in PDF documents, and we learn from those as well. And then they can ask questions to a co-pilot so that the agent has a little bit of a text field. And they can ask, okay, how is the insurance subscription? What does it cover? What is the top end of the coverage that we have if the car is broken, for example?
Yeah.
And then the data will be processed by the large language model, and then the answer will be given to the agent. So it's a way to pull all the information that the organization has together. And then there's a couple of more functions for everything that has to do with voice. So if the whole conversation is going on, we make automatic summaries of those, but we also can do like process automation, small ones. The call is started, then we can say, okay, this is the thing that you need to do. These are the steps that you need to take. So guide people through the process and then take actions from there. So it's really an assistant that's helping in every interaction you have with the customer.
Yeah, I think it's very impressive, first of all, and I like it. What I also really, and this is more from a cultural perspective, is that finally in contact center, things are happening where they can really show off a little bit more instead of being a cost center, instead of being, now they are running the show when it comes to tech, when it comes to AI. It's finally, I think this is what CEOs and what people want to see. So they finally will come to that contact center to see what's going on. And I think we should really use that much more, well, to get a good vibe instead of that people that are like, I once had somebody says, we are the plankton of this company. And I'm like, what are you saying? The plankton? Oh, this is awful. And I think now, no, you're the rocket stars. And it's really happening over there. So I think that is very sexy.
Yeah. And I think this is what we've noticed a lot working for the larger brands is really that the CX level, like the CEOs, COOs, are literally asking their operation managers, like, okay, what are we doing? Why aren't we working on this? And this is a question which is an opportunity because now you have the attention. This is exactly what you're saying. There's momentum for it. Get your budget, get going. That's the principle, I think, of it. But and then you can make your whole organization. Yeah, and this is one of our customers is really learning this on the job because we see a tendency that many of the people working in the CX space, also in the contact center itself, are very operational and they don't do a lot of marketing internally. They are not showing what they are doing. And then you need to show yourself a bit. Okay, we're resolving many of the problems you are creating. And the other thing is, and super interesting, these are the people that have contact with the customer. That's the most valuable that is that within the whole industry, I would say. But that's a bit of a learning curve.
Big secret, I think it's the biggest secret we all already have. And everybody says, come and listen in. But now it's not just listening. It's see what cool things we're doing with AI. And then, bam, they're coming. So I think we need to really talk about that a little bit more. I think it's amazing. Also, you were talking about you tape the conversation, and in CX, there's a lot of people really well working with NPS, relational NPS, transactional NPS, and maybe sentiment analysis. Do you also deploy that, or is that when you are especially in the contact center that you say?
Previously, you needed to train specific models for this. So then you had to have good examples of where conversations where people were maybe angry or not happy, and then have examples of conversations where people were really satisfied with the solution that they got or with the way they were treated. Now with large language models, it's just a question of evaluating during the conversation. We ask continuously towards the large language model, what is the state of the conversation? Is the customer happy? Is it becoming better or worse? And then you can compare the start versus the beginning. But in many cases, this is the first use case many of our customers or, let's say, potential customers think of. Okay, what can we do with sentiment? But in many cases, if there's an agent in the loop or if there's a human, they usually tend to know what the conversation is. So you don't have to tell them all the time, okay, this customer is angry, because they already registered that. They knew because they felt it, because they are doing the interaction. It's a bit overkill to put that into a system, but it might be very useful for reporting, for insights. But it can be very, so for example, we deploy like assistants where we say, okay, this now might be a good time to put forward an NBA. So a cross or an upsell, for example. And then you use the AI to determine which is a good moment. But then you have a phase. So usually there's the opening phase, there's the analysis phase, there's the closing phase. And then you shouldn't be talking about cross or upselling in the opening, but you should guide the agent towards, okay, you should say this at the end. And that can be very useful because they tend to forget, especially if the pressure for a lower AHT or handling the cases in a quick fashion, it's very useful to give a small notification saying, okay, probably you should bring this forward right now because it's a sales opportunity.
Yeah, but I do think this is also for CX leaders out there, this is where you can get tactical and strategical data. You don't have to send emails to customers for surveys anymore because you have all the conversations and you don't just have the sample size. Yeah. But that is, I think there's going to be so much more of that and I truly like it. Let's say you are the CEO to DeepDesk and your CX. How do you foster? You just said we're not, maybe not a big company, but still you need to be on top of innovation. How do you foster a culture of innovation and customer centricity within your team? How do you do that?
I think it starts with hiring the right people.
Always a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, it is just a basic example. But the other thing is, at least you should ask the people in my team, but trying to give them a lot of freedom. So if you hire the right people, then you should also decide, okay, once I hired them, I give them the room to work on their own. So they feel like, okay, I own the problem. So that's maybe a bit of culture, I would say. So I'm not trying to manage those people. Also, maybe hiring, for us, we've tried to hire some maybe junior people, which is really hard for us. It's a smaller company. So we try to hire a bit like medium or senior. It's just easier. Yeah. And the other thing I think we take a lot of pride in being almost, you know, what's the right word? But we really try to do it properly. So we feel really responsible for our customers having, like, solving their problems. And then that's something that I think you can do by example. So if I care, then I give the example of, okay, it's important to answer the questions of the customers. We don't let it linger. We try to resolve it in a good fashion. We are the ones that are proactive in principle. And we make mistakes, of course, obviously, as well. And then for us, the challenge is we're a small company with 15, 20 people. And the companies that we have as customers run like 1,000 or maybe 10,000 people. So they are really demanding. But somehow we like it as well to work in a demanding environment. So I think it's a bit of culture as well. I think the Dutch word is a bit streber, maybe.
Yeah, streber, to be ambitious. To be ambitious.
Yeah, the aim is fairly high. Yeah. That's what we keep ourselves to as well. And you have to enjoy that. If you're not enjoying that, then
go away.
This might not be the right company. Yeah, that's that could be. Yeah.
But I like it.
Once you do that, you get the customer to recognize that. So I think that's also how we win hearts and minds with our customers, because it's really hard to get into those large enterprise organizations. It's really a challenge to get that done. But once you get in and there's one customer that says, okay, these guys are really doing the things that you need them to do, especially what they are not getting with the larger companies. So for example, we can pull off things in a sprint of 2 weeks, which other companies, larger enterprise organizations, are not capable of doing, because we are more agile, we're smaller, and we can do real sprints. So, and that's something that really comes up, say, customer saying, that's one of the key differentiators why we chose you from an RFP, or because we heard you were capable of doing that. So that's making a difference. So it's execution, essentially, which makes a difference towards their customers as well, besides the technology.
I think that is an interesting trait when you look at people in IT, because a lot of them love to innovate and work on tech, but real delivery and customer interaction, that sometimes is an interesting combination. As I come from the island of Texel, you might say we're looking for a sheep with five legs, which I think is also very Dutch saying.
But that's a Dutch saying, yeah.
Yeah. So for everybody all around the world, you are getting a very interesting view on Dutch culture.
It's not too bad. But I think it relates to having a larger organizations having AI models in draft or not in production. It's the same thing. It's the experiment, it's there, and everyone is really excited about it. But we are not focusing on the innovation department within the organizations. We are always focusing on the operation side. So we're talking to the people that run the contact center. We're talking to the people that are working in the contact center, essentially, because that's where the work is done. And so that's our preferred customer as well. We're basically never hired by the innovation manager within the organization. We would love to work for them, and in many cases, it's working out. But in general, it's for a technology company such as we are, it's good to work with the people that are actually doing the work, because that's where you learn the product market fit, essentially.
Yeah, I think that's a big cultural issue within organizations. A lot of leaders have no idea what's happening there, but that's for a totally different podcast. We're almost ending the conversation. I think it's a very rich conversation, and there's so much happening here. And I think it's very valuable for our listeners. But I want to also talk a little bit about you as a leader. And I finish it off with two questions. What is a habit that you developed yourself, practice, that delivered your results? When you look maybe as an entrepreneur, as a founder, what is something you're like, this says something about me?
Oh, and I think, but this is not so much as a habit, which I learned myself, but being curious is one of the attributes that somebody has or maybe can develop, this has brought me most of the things that I've done in my life, because being interested in things and then reading up on it and then saying, okay, can we do this? And then how can we solve a problem with that? And what is the problem? Always keeping an eye out for what problems are there. If you are with a customer or if you're doing a job somewhere, seeing, okay, what's the problem those people have? Because then there's plenty of opportunity. And it's, I think, driven, and this is saying something about me being, there's a, some sort of an urge within me that things need to be efficient. I can stand it if things are not efficient. So I get really annoyed by it. And I think that's a really good driver, which brought me a lot, also a little bit of friction here and there. But I think that's where the perseverance comes from for my side as well, or in running companies. Trying to fix a problem, resolve a puzzle, which is called product market fit. And then that really takes a little bit of drive. And you need to have that as an underlying driver, I suppose. You can simulate that. Because then you will stop.
Yeah, but I like the curiosity. Do you need to make time for it? Is it? Because I also can imagine you're incredibly busy, and then you're busy and you have your agenda. How do you stay on top? Reading a book, making time, having some time to watch out of the window?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's really a habit. I think it's just being interested. Then you are almost always looking.
State of being.
How does it work? Yeah, it's almost, maybe that's easy for me, because if you have that a little bit by nature, but I foster it a bit as well, just by forcing it, like having content coming to me, maybe in newsletters or reading the right things that really help you. So I really regret that Twitter is getting a bit like a shitty platform.
Yeah,
because that was a place where there was a lot of inspiration by leaders in the space, by product owners, by people knowing their business. Yep. And it was really good to follow a fair share of people there. But that's that we need a different place for that. But that's some of the spaces where I got a lot of inspiration.
And then I always have the last one, and I think that I really like a practical answer from you, is which book, podcast, video, what do you recommend my listener to spend time to spice up their leadership? What is it that, because I'm making a recommendation list. So what is it that...
Oh, currently, the last couple of weeks, I've been listening to Door Setters. I think it's a podcast by two seasoned entrepreneurs. I think it's the founder of Startup Bootcamp. I'm not really inclined into these venture eco-space systems because I'm not interested in it.
No.
But they make good content. It's a good podcast, and it's really about entrepreneurship.
And it's a Dutch one, of course. So that is...
There's
a difficult one.
Yeah, I think when there was somebody working for A16Z, they usually have a lot of, it's an investment company from the US, and there was an analyst, I don't have it on top of my head, Albert. I'll get it to you.
You get it?
Yeah, really good news.
I'll put it in the show notes. So for everybody who's listening right now, oh, this is a cliffhanger. No, but thank you so much, Robert. I really value it. Of course, people probably want to connect to you on LinkedIn. Is it okay if I put your LinkedIn profile in the show
notes? Yes, please.
And I'll put, of course,
where
they can find Deep Desk. What I compliment you and your colleague, Brendan. He really, is it a he, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he's a you, yeah.
Oh, instead of, I'm like, okay, am I making a mistake? No, very well prepared and very, I liked it, proactive. And that's also how you can become a guest on the podcast. And so thank you for your time, for your wisdom, taking us along on the journey of AI, and especially in that contact center where we have human interactions, a very valuable conversation. Thank you so much.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
You've been listening to CX Leadership Talks. Ninka is a customer experience speaker and educator. She has written books and spoken and educated leaders all around the world. She's one of the global thought leaders in the field. We hope you've enjoyed this show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can also find us on YouTube and LinkedIn and ninkabloom.com. Thanks again for joining us today, and we'll see you next time on CX Leadership Talks.